Welcome to America's Commercial Real Estate Show, your source for market intel, forecasts, and strategies. Hello, I am Michael Bull, and I appreciate you being with us. This show is brought to you by CommercialAgentSuccess.com. Check it out for the ultimate in commercial agent training. It's 21 one-hour videos with forms and calculators, and it's all in the cloud. It's awesome. Check it out. Learn more at CommercialAgentSuccess.com. Well, today we're going to talk about the international investor's view of commercial real estate in the U.S. AFIRE is the Association of International Real Estate Investors, and they're focused on commercial properties in the U.S. And AFIRE does a survey of their members each year. And it's really interesting because I think, you know, as we sit in our markets and our cities, it's kind of nice to look at the broader view of the world. You know, how they look at the U.S. and the timing and the trends and what they think about the future, what concerns them, and what excites them. Please welcome my guest. It's Gunnar Branson, and he's CEO of AFIRE. Gunnar, good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Michael. Thanks for bringing me on again.
Well, thank you. And if you will, tell the audience, you know, about this survey. When was it done? Who do you survey? How many people?
Certainly. We do two surveys a year, actually. We've been calling them pulse surveys because we try to make them as quick as possible. And this was in January of this year that we talked to just under 100 of our members and got their responses to some key questions about what their priorities are for the year. So, again, this market is moving so quickly that that's two or three months ago now. And some of these things have changed. But I think a lot of the general trends and the sentiment is certainly consistent at this point.
And so these are basically C-suite type folks with companies that are international but invest in the U.S.?
Absolutely. About half of our membership is outside the U.S. in 24 different countries. And these are, you know, senior executives, heads of country, CEOs, heads of investing in U.S. real estate amongst institutional investors. So think pension plans, sovereign wealth groups, very large family offices that are actively investing in the U.S. The other half are a lot of the same names that we all know in the United States that are investment managers and facilitators helping these global investors invest in our markets.
Okay. Well, great. And, you know, the story on commercial real estate in the U.S., you know, some of the key aspects are really office, I guess, and then, you know, what rates have done to the market. I guess affordable housing is a big question. So I think the one that's most interesting to me, some people say, Michael, you know, how do you decide what to talk about, who to interview on your show? I'm like, well, sorry to say it, but it's what's interesting to me. I mean, you know, so,
fair
you know,
enough.
And what I think is interesting to principals, developers, ownership groups that invest in commercial real estate in the U.S. So I want to start with office. You know, when you talk to the folks that need the survey on office, you know, what did you learn?
Well, it's not a lot of news, really. It is continuing trends. Office is probably on bottom of everyone's wish list as investors at this point. And there has been a steady decline in office investing, not just in the last couple of years, but across the last decade as institutional investors have been rebalancing their portfolios more towards multifamily. There's a lot of reasons, including the demand characteristics in multifamily that they like, and they are continuing to invest there. Now, office obviously is going through a lot of difficulty right now, and you are seeing that it's also where they're looking to get out of investments as much as they can. But a lot of the sentiment around office is that there are obviously two markets, those office buildings that are newer, that are doing very well. Actually, in some cases, in some cities, they're doing better than they've ever done in terms of leasing and in terms of rents. However, the bulk of the market, a majority of the market, is not 5 years young and needs new capital in order to be leased at this point, or at least at the levels that pro formas would suggest they should. So even though even if interest rates immediately return to where they were in the next quarter, which they won't, I think there are issues in terms of just tenancy, in terms of usage. Some of that is back to work, but you were seeing a reduction in occupancy even before COVID occurred. So a lot of folks that I talk to are saying, well, not unlike retail 10 years ago, we may be in a situation where we're a little under-demolished in terms of older office product office product that needs to be converted either to other uses or needs to be upgraded significantly in order to be attractive to the current users of office.
Yeah, and one of the things that investors like in some cases is to buy when a market's down, right? They like to buy distress or properties that no one else wants. So when you ask their survey about what their views on the current model of office use, what did you learn from that as far as when they think folks will be more using office space?
Well, I mean, part of what was interesting to me about that is that a clear majority said that we haven't figured it out yet, that office use, how office is used, we have not settled into the new normal yet in terms of what tenancy is going to be going forward, how people are going to use office. So when we asked that question, I was struck by how many folks, I think it was something like 68 to 70%, said, we really don't know yet what it looks like in the next 5 years, that we're still discovering as we go forward here. So I think, generally speaking, it's a period of discovery still.
Interesting. Well, if any of the listeners are looking to get out of office, I'd love to help them. I am really pro-office, and I think I'm probably a minority here, but I think that office will turn around quicker than people think. You mentioned retail. I think it's kind of like that, where everybody said, this retail's dead forever. It's like, well, it wasn't the case, right?
And retail continues to be an interesting success story as some of the more difficult retail really has bottomed out over the last 10 years. You're seeing retail is becoming a more favored asset class. I wouldn't say it's at the top of everyone's list. That would be multifamily, industrial, logistics, data centers. That sort of thing would be at the top of most investors' lists. But retail is no longer a laggard. They've actually done a lot in terms of recovery. And they've gotten rid of a lot of the kind of problematic retailers that were in difficult straits 10 years ago. And what remains now are new retailers and retailers that are growing and are using omnichannel strategies. So it's both in the store as well as on the internet. And these companies are thriving. So the retail that remains right now is doing quite well. That's obviously not across the board, but I'd say a good number of retail centers across the country are doing very well, and it's becoming a more attractive investment class.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, to look at the allocation plans of these investment groups in U.S. real estate. And you talked about, some of the allocations already, but did any trend there kind of jump out to you of anything changing?
I think it's mostly a story of continued growth. I think part of what was surprising to me, we asked the question for the first time in a different way. We often ask, what are people's favorite markets what they want to invest in? And we changed the question up a little bit this time because a lot of what people said they wanted was different from what they actually invested in that year. So we asked the question instead, if you had a clean slate, if you were just starting from scratch and you did not have a current book, where would you prioritize your investments on a go-forward basis? And some interesting markets jumped to the top when we asked that question, where it was Charlotte at the top of that list, Dallas, Denver, New York falling to number four, number five, Raleigh, and Atlanta up in the top 10 or so. I think, there continues to be a big demand for Sunbelt investments. It is actually a larger proportion of their investing and their asset management, as well as their investing on a go-forward basis. So as you look at generally across the Sunbelt, obviously it's different from city to city, there continues to be a great attraction to the Sunbelt and a desire to have more assets there. However, when we ask the question in terms of where you're most active, you see a different story. Then you see the major cities, Los Angeles, D.C., Seattle, Dallas, New York in that top five, and Atlanta right underneath it. So part of what I find interesting is if we ask the question, gee, if you could start from scratch, what would it look like? And you end up with a certain kind of portfolio. If you ask where are they most active, it's a very different thing. So there's a lot of transition taking place, perhaps. There's a lot of investors that are reassessing what their strategies have been in the past and moving forward in a different way.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know I have an office building available in Atlanta for $60 a foot to buy. And you know, it's like, wow, I think there's going to be a lot of money made investing in office coming up.
And no doubt, and I'd say a clear majority, over 90% of the folks that we asked, expect significant distress sales over the next three quarters. Many folks have said to me that they believe that 2024 will be that vintage year that you regretted you didn't invest more in. So I think your office building that you're trying to sell, that may very well be attractive to an institutional investor over the next three quarters.
And I think of institutional investors typically as more core. How many of the survey respondents, you know, are interested in value add or distress?
They're very interested at this point. I think core is a real question mark just from the standpoint of what's the definition of core. So there's a lot of core office out there that is not performing. And that, I think, is a real question. So we're almost using new categories that to a great extent are based on age at this point in terms of office buildings that are doing that we would traditionally think of as core or core plus in the past. They're really the best of the best. And again, they're doing better than anybody.
Yeah, good point. Well, one of the issues, I think, in our industry right now is the rising insurance cost. What did your respondents tell you about their concerns there?
Well, their concerns are great. There's no doubt. When you see doubling or tripling of insurance premiums in some markets, and in some cases, some markets where insurance is no longer available, that changes the equation considerably. Insurance was never really something that was high on anyone's list when they were thinking in terms of costs in their performance, but you start changing that and it changes it. Interesting to me is that a year ago I asked the question, how many of you believe that climate risk is priced into our current valuations? And a clear majority then, and a clear majority when I asked the question again in January of 85 to 90% believe that we are not currently pricing for that. So translate that to that beautiful coastal location in southern Florida. The pricing is not reflecting the risk at this point. But the insurance companies are doing it for us. So at this point, insurance companies are starting to figure out for themselves what the actual risk is. And they're doing it because they have to, because their losses, every time there's a major storm, are getting more and more significant. They're also really pressing investors to make sure, on a very granular level, how vulnerable is that asset to storm damage? How vulnerable is it to fire, to drought, to all the issues that we've been seeing seemingly increasing across the Sun Belt? So I think people are starting to take it seriously because we're putting a dollar sign next to what that risk actually is. So we're moving from worrying about it to actually pricing it. And I think we're going to continue to see that movement as the insurance companies are pressing us to acknowledge what the real risk is.
Yeah, it's a problem. I have had a town home on a harbor in Florida and that I rented out, and ended up my multiple insurance policies were cost more than the actual gross rent on the townhome. I'm like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So again, I think we're just at the beginning of this story, but I think it's going to dominate a lot of folks' thinking, especially if they're investing in some of these critical areas. And half the population of the United States is in climate risk areas. So storm damage and flooding and fire and drought, these are serious issues that impact, you know, a major chunk of any institutional investor's portfolio.
Did anybody have any ideas for remedies? Solutions?
I don't know. I hear cold fusion is a good idea, that might help.
Okay. Let's talk about affordable housing, because that's an issue on the minds of everyone these days. What were the thoughts there on the survey?
Well, certainly a majority, again, feel that this is one of the most important issues that we have right now. And it's not just in the United States. I think a lot of people think of it as just a domestic problem. The entire developed world is having affordability problems and accessibility for housing for major chunks of their population. We're not just talking about the poorest of the poor. They're having difficulty, but it's also the middle class, the working class. Even professionals are having harder and harder time. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And, you know, that is probably two or three shows that we could talk about that. But a lot of what our investors are concerned about is just the volume of housing that's being created in the United States right now. There's not enough being built to reflect the population. And as a consequence, those at the bottom are being pushed out, in great part because those who can afford it will get housing and those that can't will not. So a lot of the solution from a real estate perspective is build more housing. But there are quite a few obstacles. And probably the most difficult one to deal with for a lot of folks is zoning restrictions that don't make sense anymore in terms of density, in terms of height, et cetera. A real demand to try to create more housing in urban areas, and there's a lot of pushing back. The NIMBYism continues to be a problem. I don't want to have an apartment building on the same block as my house. Concerns about values, concerns about the fabric of the society within these suburban neighborhoods or these small neighborhoods within cities. So there's a lot of obstacles. On top of that, you've got the cost of construction continues to rise. The cost of the land continues to rise. A lot of issues. But there is also an incredible amount of interest in investing, not just in the best apartment buildings in a market, the most expensive apartment buildings, but the institutional investor is seeing the same numbers that we see in terms of just the ever-expanding demand for that workforce housing, for that middle-of-the-road housing, in addition to the affordable housing. And so a lot of these investors think, again, these are pension plans, so that they're working on behalf of a lot of people that need affordable housing, wherever they may be, are very concerned and are starting to put money behind strategies that are really focusing on that kind of middle of the market in terms of housing. So affordability, big issue. Building new, very difficult. Transitioning, a lot of people over the last year or two have been talking about taking some of these underused office buildings and turning them into apartments. Some of them, that will happen, but that is difficult, that is expensive, that has a high risk to it, and in many cases, cities prohibit it, New York being one of them, in terms of making it very, very difficult for people to change usage. And this is an old story that we've had in terms of zoning laws that have been in place for sometimes hundreds of years. So we've got a lot of work to do from a municipal standpoint. We have a lot of work to do in terms of getting communities to understand the value of having mixed income within a single neighborhood. We all need to have good teachers and lawyers, teachers and nurses and firemen and policemen to be able to live in the neighborhoods that they serve. And there has to be affordable housing for that. So it's a big societal issue as well as an investment issue.
You know, our lawyers that listen to this show are going to be really glad you lumped them in, that we all want more of them. You know?
Well, everyone wants affordable housing. It doesn't matter what income you have. Everyone needs affordable housing. And I think it's getting out of reach even for people that are relatively well off.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Well, one of the questions you asked was about debt and equity. What did you see there?
Well, I think the debt story is an interesting one because we're in a period right now where the debt markets, although not completely frozen, the traditional kind of regional smaller bank lenders into the real estate market are certainly not lending currently. And there's a good chance that they're going to be a bit slower coming out of this as well. At the same time, you are seeing a preponderance of debt funds emerging, and institutions in particular are expanding their debt offerings from where they have been before, in great part because it is a way to enter into some of these assets, into some of these markets where perhaps the pricing has been a bit high, and it's been difficult for them to get those assets. So to do so through a debt strategy makes sense, and at this point in the cycle, debt financially just makes a lot more sense perhaps than equity for a lot of investors. So stay tuned. You're going to see a lot more kind of debt funds emerging. Certainly everyone is working on that right now and is very, very interested. I think one of the things that happens when we go through cycles like this is that we start restructuring where the capital is aggregated and how it's put to work. That includes debt. And we've gone through these kinds of shifts before, go back to the early 90s, and the kind of move into the fund manager model that really dominates what we have right now in the U.S., really got going during a time when the savings and loans departed the real estate sector.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great time to be in the debt market, and I think it's a great time for the actual lenders and banks that have been doing it to be in it. I think you can do some of the safest loans you've ever done, in my opinion, right now, with prices lower, right, and less competition, and build some great relationships. So I'll tell you, lenders out there, get out and do some loans and do some safe loans. Don't just say no. I know a lot of lenders are doing loans for their existing clients and not picking up new clients, but I'd say get out there and do it. What Gunnar, do you see as an allocation typically for international investors in U.S. real estate as far as using debt versus paying all cash? Traditionally, what's it been, and is that you think that's a change we're going to see?
Well, that's hard to tell. That's often a moving target in terms of what their leverage levels are going to be from moment to moment. I think certainly right now you're seeing a lot more all cash, with the expectation that they could find debt or a higher level of cash, and that could find more debt when the markets get better. Mark Zandi at Moody's Analytics, I just interviewed him yesterday, and he spoke to AFIR membership back in February. Is convinced that we may see some minor rate decreases as soon as June. So I think there's some optimism. Others are predicting more towards the end of the year. But in any case, I think most investors expect that there will be some relief given in terms of interest rates. So as one is looking for a reasonable debt package within their capital stack, there is this idea, well, I can do a little bit of more equity now, and I can then get more debt as I go forward. So I think we'll continue to see that evolve going forward.
Yeah, on the broker side, we are seeing a lot more cash buyers in the marketplace and kind of taking advantage of less competition in the market.
Right, right.
So the thoughts on interest rates from your respondents is basically, do they agree with Moody's? They think the rates are going to come down a little?
For the most part, our investors tend to be a little less sanguine, perhaps, than Moody's. they're a little scarred right now. It's been a rough 18 months. And I think there is a tendency for people to be a little bit more conservative about their outlook on what the Fed might or might not do. Very hard to predict the Fed, certainly. They have their reasons to do what they do. And some people complain about it. Some people think they're managing it quite well. But I do think that it's interesting to me because the issues that people have and the landscape that they're seeing looks remarkably similar to a year ago. But what has changed is a certain sense of we may be seeing light now. Things might be getting better soon. And there are very few, but there are a few transactions that are taking place. So people are starting to see, we don't even know the value of a lot of assets because we don't have comparable transactions to be able to kind of market against. But the good news is, I think for the U.S. market versus say the European market, is that there is a general market consensus of where those values might be. And we're taking our hits in terms of seeing a significant decline in office values. That is allowing us to then move forward. That's allowing us to say, all right, this is what they're worth. There will be some clearing at this point. So I think there's a lot of optimism about clearing taking place over the next couple of quarters and for us to start really getting the engine going again in terms of new transactions.
Well, that's good to hear, and we're seeing that on the broker level. As a broker, I'm closing two foreclosed properties this week. They're both office, and so we're seeing some of the lenders kind of, all right, let's sell these notes, let's do these short sales, let's foreclose and move these through. And I think that's helpful to your point, so we can understand, you know, some values. So we've certainly seen activity pick up tremendously in 2024. Gunnar, as you kind of go through this and part of this and as CEO there of Fire, what do you think kind of jumps out at you as a trend here or something we should think about moving forward?
I think you certainly keep your eye on the insurance rates. I mean, I think that is that's going to continue to be a very important story going forward, and it is of great concern. I found it interesting that although there is a lot of concern about geopolitics generally and its impact on global capital flows and on what is proving to be a rather challenging election season in the United States, that even though there's a lot of concern, a lot of worry about it, when we asked if they had a different investment strategy depending on who wins the U.S. election over the next year, almost all of them said no, that their investment strategy remains the same whether one person or another person gets elected. So I think part of what I find kind of interesting about this is that we're very concerned. Certainly we've got two major conflicts in Europe. We have a kind of tension, if you will, between us and a major trading partner in China. These are challenging times on a global basis. A lot of polarization between points of view, both domestically and internationally, in terms of where things should go. However, the investment strategies seem to be continuing based on what looks like a pretty optimistic outlook for our economy, for new growth in terms of technology, AI, some nearshoring or onshoring manufacturing, that you're seeing some new technology, some new growth. If we're able to manage better our immigration policy and allow for talent and capital to more easily come into the United States, at the same time creating a secure environment at our borders, I think if we can do that, we've got some real upside. On top of the fact that we've made some significant commitments towards infrastructure investing, and towards a continued transition to a more stable source of energy. And by stable, I mean one that doesn't depend on countries that perhaps don't like us very much. That even though, you know, we're producing all the oil we're using right now in the United States, we're still involved in the global oil markets in a lot of different ways. So it creates more instability. So if we can move more of our energy use into a different area, which is what a lot of people are working on right now, there may be some significant upside in terms of growth, even beyond what the more optimistic economists are pointing to. So I think there's a general sense of optimism. The United States continues to be the, although not the safest market in people's minds, I think the safest countries include Canada and Australia for investing, but the area of the greatest potential growth in terms of real estate continues to be the United States, and you see the allocations the institutional international investors are putting towards real estate in the United States is reflecting that. They are seeing a growth in terms of allocation to the U.S. This is a fantastic property market generally, deep and broad, with a lot of different kinds of opportunities depending on your strategy. And although not the safest country in the world to invest in, it is in the top three. I think whatever issues they might have politically with the United States are more than made up for in terms of the growth opportunities in many of our markets.
Well, good. Well, now I feel better, Connor. Thank you. Like to leave with optimism, right? Gunnar Branson, CEO of Fire, thank you for being on the show, sir.
My pleasure, Michael.
All right. And thank you for joining us around the country. Hey, let us know what you think. Please reach out to us. Please share the show. Please connect with us. And if I can help you with anything, reach out to me. My email is michael@bullrealty.com. It's an easy one. So until next week, be sure that you always lead, learn, and laugh. And join us for America's Commercial Real Estate Show. America's Commercial Real Estate Show is brought to you by Bullitt Realty. For commercial brokerage sales and leasing in the Southeast U.S., contact our show host by email at michael@bullittrealty.com. By Commercial Agent Success Strategies, 21 incredible one-hour agent training videos. Learn more at commercialagentsuccess.com. And by Lument. For senior housing, healthcare, and multifamily financing, visit lument.com. For more podcasts and videos, subscribe and visit creshow.com.